Nic teda, nějak.
Okay, my name is Jordy Izzard, and I'm here at the home of Ann Hollick. I am an alumni relations officer at SICE, and she graduated from SICE in the class of 1966 and later earned her PhD in political economy from Homewood and graduated in 1971. And I'm just going to ask you a few questions today, and I look forward to hearing about some of your memories.
Happy to share with you, Jordy.
Thank you. And the first question just is, let's go back a little bit in time and recall what it was that originally brought you to SICE.
John Kennedy said, think what you can do for your country. And I was at Berkeley majoring in 16th century English literature, planning to be a professor of English literature, and I thought, oops, I better think what I can do for my country. And coincidentally, with the launch of Sputnik, there was no graduate school money anyway for the humanities, so I quickly looked about and I found that I could happily switch to a career in international affairs and do something perhaps for my country, since as an English literature major I had studied German, and I already had French, and I have Spanish as a native language. SICE was persuaded that I could handle this career shift, and I was happily admitted. I was happy to choose SICE over Columbia because I thought the two-year program would be an advantage to really prepare myself for a career shift of that magnitude.
That's great. That's great. And what? So tell me a little bit more about what brought you into the world of international affairs.
I was born in Panama, so I grew up in another part of the world. When we came to the United States, I realized that there was a great deal of variety out there, and so it just was natural for me to think in terms of international affairs, and certainly Kennedy was a great motivator for all of us in that era, and the beginnings of the Vietnam War, of course.
And what were your first memories of being at SICE when you were there?
The air conditioning system that didn't quite work. It was the new building, and they were having a hard time getting that to adjust. And once that was adjusted, President Kennedy was assassinated. So that was one of my earliest memories. I was living at the International Student House, two blocks from SICE, and the entire country was plunged into mourning, and I began to ask myself, what am I doing here?
Interesting.
But it was a very shocking time. The faculty at SICE were, of course, very supportive, very, very diverse, and so finding my way through SICE was a good experience, and I was complimented regularly on the fact that I did not use jargon, and I never told the faculty member in question that I didn't know the jargon. I simply was going to rely on my English.
Great. And did you do orals when you were there? Did you do Spanish, or?
Well, I did all of the required subjects. I did 1 year at SICE. I then took off 1 year to go to Sri Lanka. I worked for the U.S. Educational Foundation, and then I came back to finish up. And so I took all of the required examinations during that period of time. SICE had not changed too much from the time I entered in 63 to the time I returned and finished up in 66. But the air conditioning certainly was working, and that was a great plus. The faculty were interesting, lively, and in fact, I was so comfortable with SICE that I resolved when I went on for my graduate work that I would go to Homewood as an extension of SICE, because SICE was not at that time comfortable with PhD students, so it was an easy transition for me to go from SICE to Homewood and keep SICE, in a sense, as my base.
That's great. And you mentioned, when we were offline, a little bit about memories of being at SAIS right around the time Kennedy was shot. Do you remember that? And can you share any memories of kind of where you were?
That is always a vivid experience when some catastrophic event occurs. Being in Washington at the time was particularly traumatic. I was sitting in the student house with my other dorm mates watching when Lee Harvey Oswald, when basically the second assassination occurred. And so it was a very traumatic time. That was two blocks from SAIS. Within the school itself, we went into a bit of a state of mourning. But classes proceeded and things went on. But it was Washington itself that was memorable. The city basically shut down, and I was participating in my first national funeral.
Interesting. And what else do you remember about being there? Were there particular classes you recall, or your friends, or faculty members?
Paul Linebarger was a constant delight. Lots of very interesting people. The people who came from Bologna were always very lively and very interesting. I think I got to like just about all of them. And I actually came back to teach at SAIS. Robert Osgood was my mentor, ultimately. The way I blended SAIS and Homewood was to have as my mentors for my doctoral thesis faculty who were based at SAIS, and Robert Osgood became my dissertation advisor. And so I connected the two, basically Homewood and Hopkins, Baltimore, Washington.
That's great. Now tell me a little bit about your career when you graduated in 66. Where did you start and how did things evolve for you?
As best as I can remember, my career has been in government, both in Congress and in the executive branch, as well as academia. So I've got basically a three-part career. And my first jobs, as I say, I went overseas and worked at the U.S. Educational Foundation. But then in Washington, the era was such that the most interesting jobs appeared in the area of Vietnam. And I was working for the Library of Congress when I was offered a position with Senator Fulbright to run the Pentagon Papers hearings. So that was a very memorable opportunity to interview the national leaders who were engaged in the Vietnam War. And it took me certainly away from my area of expertise. My area of expertise as it evolved at Homewood was ocean policy. And I found that Senator Fulbright said he wanted somebody who was not known for their stand on the Vietnam War. So he found that my credentials were perfect in that regard, because I was an expert on U.S. ocean policy and not on the Vietnam War. So he handed me the hearings, and we had a wonderful experience putting those together. Recalling the events of the Vietnam War, Senator Fulbright was very clear that he wanted this to be a lesson in history so that future generations would learn from the history, and but that we would not, in fact, be biased in the way we approached the hearings. So it was, you can imagine what it's like to interview Bob McNamara and people like that when you're freshly out of school.
Absolutely.
It was very exciting. And then I moved into the executive branch, Treasury Department, State Department. Very fortunate in all of the opportunities that I had in both places.
Tell me more about that. I'm sure there's more, or maybe where you evolved from there.
Well, having moved from being an expert on ocean policy to an expert on Vietnam, I then moved into a position with Ambassador Tom Pickering. And I ran his planning office, which was good as a broadening experience. The name of his bureau was Oceans, Environment, and Scientific Affairs. And so we were under constant harassment at that time from the Congress for our work in these areas. And I learned about the culture in the executive branch, the culture in the State Department. One of the things that was noticeable was that you have to really transform yourself when you move from agency to agency. In the Treasury Department, George Shultz was a very easy man to work with. In the State Department, much larger operation, you had to find your way through the hierarchy and you had to find good people to work with. Some were better than others, but it was in fact a very welcoming environment for people such as myself who like thoughtful work. And as you noticed from the recent revelations of the diplomatic correspondence, there is a heavy emphasis in the State Department on reporting and information sharing. And so that was a comfortable environment for me. And then I would go back into academia when the opportunity presented itself. In fact, when I was in the department, I was working at one point. I never became a Foreign Service officer. I always stayed with the civil service, which meant I was brought in as a senior executive service officer. But I resolved to try to work in the State Department fashion, which is to move every 2 years. And what that allows you to do is to become expert over and over in different areas. So you have a very steep learning curve at the beginning of your assignment, and then you move on to become an expert. And then at that point in time, you have to make way for a successor. So the State Department was good to accommodate me, even though I wasn't a Foreign Service officer.
Great. And what else? How else did your
strange experiences in the State Department?
Yeah.
Well, you might say that they're all strange in the State Department, but I can remember some of the most really rewarding experiences were when I was working with Ambassador Pickering during the Iraq war. Ambassador Pickering was the U.S. UN rep, and I was in charge of his Washington office, and so it was a constant problem and delight to gather information on what was going on in Iraq and to share that with my boss in New York and to manage the U.S. UN office in Washington and connect it with all of its ambassadors in New York to the Washington scene. So that was truly a challenge. But Pickering is always a great person to work for. And so having chosen my boss well, it was a good experience, and he was thoroughly briefed and thoroughly informed every step of the way.
That's great. And I know that you had other parts of your career that you want to talk about as well, but before we leave this part, do you want to add anything else? Do you have any other memories or experiences you'd like to share?
Well, there's the inevitable ones that you shouldn't share when you have less than satisfactory experiences, but I'd say on the whole, I was very fortunate in finding the State Department to be a very, very good place for someone who has trained at SAIS. They accept your ability to learn quickly, and so I think that that fits in well with my SAIS experience, that I was able to move and develop new skills, and it is great fun to work on Africa. I did at one point become an African specialist, and I can tell you that as an officer who specializes in African affairs, you have the most delightful time flying over rhinoceros and traveling over Victoria Falls and doing the things that need to be done to help with the aid programs. So there's a lot to be said for any of the different parts of the State Department. I cannot speak too highly of that. And if you plan to work in the Congress, it's really important to choose your committee and your senior boss as well. That matters a great deal. But the State Department has a culture that's pretty solid, and the Treasury Department has a culture that's very solid as well. If you go into that agency, typically you will find highly qualified people. And so that is rewarding. You will not always find that on Capitol Hill. So anybody who goes to SAIS has to know what they want, what their area of expertise is, and try to find people who are congenial and where you feel that you're going to be able to make a contribution and excel.
That's great. Now tell me a little bit about your academic life, because I think you moved into academics as well.
Yes, I personally find it refreshing to move from being a practitioner to being a scholar teacher. I have one vignette. My friend Joe Nye, who came in to be a deputy secretary of state, arrived from Harvard, never having worked in the government, but having written many, many, many brilliant books. And I remember his first days in Washington and watching him get up to speed. And I realized how much it helped me as a scholar and as a practitioner to have both experiences. And I watched Joe learn very quickly what needed to be done. And so I do encourage people who have the opportunity, who are working in the government, to spend some time out, and for people who are working in academia to spend some time in the government so that they understand both sides of the equation. I could not have had a better experience as an academic. I have published a number of books, which were always rewarding because you get to go into things in great depth. And then I'm still going to conferences that are with colleagues from the former period of time. But then when you go into academia, you learn a totally different way of looking at the world than what you do when you're in the government and on the front line. I remember sitting in a conference room where I was asked the question, what does the State Department think about law? I just come as an academic to this meeting for the first time. I'm sitting at a conference table, and I remember evaluating that question, and I was the State Department representative in the room. A bunch of scientists and whatnot were there, and my shock at being asked that question and being expected to represent the State Department was like, I've never represented the department. And my first reaction was, the department is a large gray building. It doesn't think anything. But I kept that to myself, and I thought carefully, and I said, I came forward with a position that made perfect sense, and I was gratified to report that at the end of this conversation with a bunch of scientists, that I was told that they were just pleased that they had had such a reasoned position from the State Department. So I think that's the hardest thing about shifting from academia into government. You are expected to think like an agency. You are expected to imagine that you are a policy position. And then it's really fun. You can be creative and make things up, which is what you want to do, and do it well.
That's great. So tell us about where you taught and what you did in your
Oh, my academic career includes publications, Princeton University Press, Hopkins Press.
But you taught at Homewood in 1988?
No, I taught at Zeiss.
Okay.
I taught at MIT, National Defense University, Joint Military Intelligence College. So I've been able to move around, and each of these has been a refreshing experience and given me the opportunity to publish,
which is
good. So I would recommend, if you're going into government career, to take sabbaticals and refresh yourself and tune yourself up. There's a great program, or there used to be a great program at the State Department, I don't think it exists anymore, called the Senior Seminar, where you are obliged to spend a year thinking and traveling around with members from other agencies, and I learned a lot about other agencies during that 1 year. And so anybody who wants to go into the Department of Agriculture or some other agency, really each agency is a different culture. So I'm hoping that your students will think of it in terms of their personality, their mindset, where they might fit best. If they're going to be in international affairs, it could be business, it could be something else. One of my most interesting careers was to be morphed into a a trade expert. Now, you can imagine what happened was that the officer who was due to become the trade officer for the State Department was suddenly reassigned overseas at the last minute because her husband was going to be the ambassador overseas. So they chose me to become the head of the trade office, and I said, fine. And I then learned about trade. Now imagine walking into a subject cold, which is what happens to most Foreign Service officers, and starting to read cable traffic. Now, I don't know what you know about hammered nails, but I know absolutely zip about it. But I would get cable after cable dealing with things like hammered nails, water beds, things like that. And I thought, I have left the planet. I've gone down through the looking glass. This is insane. This is State Department traffic. But yes, the State Department deals with everything. And so if you're trading in these exotic, esoteric things, I remember one meeting we had where we were trying to decide on how we were going to punish the Europeans. And it was insane. I mean, we were at the Office of the Trade Representative, and there's that wonderful little Belgian who is among the least harmful countries, and you're trying to decide what retaliatory measures you're going to levy on these countries for some particular trade infraction. So it's truly an exciting career to stay in international affairs. If you move, it gets even more exciting because you end up in situations that are just bizarre. Do you know what the endive is? It's the principal export of Belgium. Well, I had not known that. But if you want to affect Belgian policy, then you need to know things like that and what the principal exports are and blue cheese and how it affects France and champagne and all of these sorts of things become part of your portfolio as a State Department officer if you're working in the international trade area. Plus you do some really weird travel. Really, really weird travel. I went to the Uruguay round opening of that, and that was very enlightening. And I cannot say enough about the diligence and the intelligence and the ability of the Foreign Service officer to get quickly up to speed, okay. Much faster than I could.
That's great. So, and in your academic world, where have you enjoyed teaching the most?
Well, my MIT students were the most challenging. Mm-hmm. They are amazing, absolutely amazing. And they always thought out of the box. Mm-hmm. I mean, they would ask the most probing and just very stimulating questions. Mm-hmm. I love the officers who are in retraining, like at the Joint Military Intelligence College, because they're very diligent government officers who are trying to broaden themselves, and so you could do some fun things there as well, but they're very different. I mean, where you go to school reflects where you come from, and so if mm-hmm. you're in a government retraining university, you're in a very different situation than if you're an undergraduate at MIT, and you're going to be who knows what, and you're just asking very probing questions. I've never taught my alma mater, undergraduates, Berkeley. I've never taught at Berkeley, but I bet that would be, like MIT, very challenging. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's great. So tell me, you also mentioned evolving into a career on Capitol Hill. Can you tell us a little bit about that as well?
Well, I mentioned a bit about it with mm-hmm. the time that I mm-hmm. spent on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, which was exciting. Mm-hmm. Then I had some really just calm work at the Library of Congress. Mm-hmm. But there's lots of opportunities there. It depends upon your senator, your congressman, and the committee. And I'm watching how these committees are changing now mm-hmm. over time. I'm not sure that I would want to work on Capitol Hill now, because when I was there, there was a very strong bipartisan effort, and every committee had a clear understanding mm-hmm. that the members worked as a group. So if you were a Republican or if you were a Democrat, you were on a committee for foreign relations and you came together as a group. From what I gather now, from what we hear, mm-hmm. that kind of national consciousness of the nation's interests is not prevalent. Mm-hmm. And so I would, as a SAIS student, be very careful about whom I'm working for and what the mission is of the committee, the congressman, and how comfortable I would feel with that. In general, it's true when you work in an agency, you also want to know about your own comfort level with what they're doing, but it's especially true on the Hill. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Library of Congress is a very nice place to work, by the way, if you have a kind of an academic bent, if you want to be thoughtful and write some thought pieces. They allow you then to work indirectly for congressmen who need information quickly, mm-hmm. but of a general sort.
Mm-hmm. So you enjoyed that?
Very much, yeah.
That's great. Good. Well, thinking now to present day and the current students at SAIS, do you have, and you've given us a lot of good advice, the students, but is there anything in particular you would impart to them in terms of advice?
The students at SAIS continue to be excellent. I'm happy to work with them, as I continue to do on the SAIS review. And I think that the world they're moving into is very different from the world that I moved into. At the point of my graduation, the United States was indeed the preeminent country, the preeminent power. And certainly there was a lot of reward in going into a career in the government, because you had not only the influence in this country's foreign policy, but you had influence around the world. That being the case, then, clearly it's no longer true now that you're not going to expect to be making global policy, but if you're willing to be comfortable with shaping U.S. policy, there are still, no doubt, a lot of rewards out there. Choose your agency carefully. Mm-hmm. Make sure that you know who the secretary at any point in time is going to be, because, in fact, the head of an agency makes a big difference. So mm-hmm. I would just caution every student, know themselves, know where they're likely to fit. If they're interested in business, mm-hmm. there are doubtless many opportunities out there. In fact, those students who are interested, and preferably who have an Asian orientation, could find a lot of opportunities in international business. So I would encourage that as well. But I think it's always good to be flexible, because over a career of, say, 40 years, you may have to shift. Mm-hmm. The economy may change. The government will change. You want to be prepared to do different things. Mm-hmm. That can be refreshing, and it is also wise to be prepared.
Mm-hmm. That's great. And do you have anything else you'd like to add in the conversation? Have you thought anything more about your career or your memories of SAIS, or do we think we've captured most of it?
My memories of SAIS are excellent, fond, wonderful place, good basis. I still enjoy my interactions there. Mm-hmm. I think the students there should make the most of Washington while mm-hmm. they're at SAIS. Mm-hmm. Make the most of the faculty. The faculty are very amenable to student involvement. And take advantage of the think tanks that are all around SAIS. There's a lot of good stuff going on at DuPont Circle. And they should engage in whatever organizations that are there, try to get some internships, link those up to what you're doing at the school, and you can create a very nice network. Washington is a great city, and I encourage anybody who's coming into it to take full advantage.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Well, thank you so much, Anne, and we really appreciate your time, and you've led a very interesting life, and thanks for sharing it with us.
Very welcome. Thank you.
Bye-bye.